You're listening to the Cap and Haw Show.
Stories by Olczyk.
I get a tap on the shoulder from a nurse. She hands me a note and says the Toronto Maple Leafs are on the phone. I leave the delivery room when my wife is on a scale of 6, giving birth. And they said, Eddie, we hate to do this to you, but we just traded you to the Winnipeg Jets. So now I go back to the delivery room. My wife looks at me. You can imagine what the hell she said to me. And I just made up some excuse about my aunt. And she looked at me and said, where are we going? I said, what? She says, where are we going? I said, guess. Guess where we're going. And she looked at me and she said, Winnipeg. And I just shook my head, and she went from a 6 to a 1. She just clamped right up. Thomas Olczyk wasn't born for another 4 hours.
Stories by Olczyk.
All right, time to talk to the one and only Eddie Olczyk, who joins us now here on the Cap and Haw Show. You talk to him with us, you hear him with us all the time. Edzo, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Morning, Eddie.
Hey, good morning, David, Brooke, Kapler. How the travel's going for you, buddy?
Oh, yeah, those were a lot of fun last night. 95-minute sit
Cap,
on the
Cap,
ground
Cap.
Here.
Hey, listen, relax. Just breathe in your nose, out your mouth. You can't control it. Just relax. Just take it easy.
I did. I played along. I had fun. I tweeted throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, but now you're firing on airlines. I don't think you want to be doing that. You know, you're going to get on a few more airplanes coming up here. They can take you through some rough air if they want.
You're right, Eddie.
Oh, yeah, they're going to take everybody else just to make a point at me.
Hey, you're making a point. You're making a point on national TV and radio. I think I'm sure somebody would want to maybe rattle your cage a little bit.
Mr. Kapler, we're sorry for losing your luggage.
That's why I fly United. United Airlines is my airline of choice.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue there. I just I fly 90-95% of United as well. But you can't control it, so just take it easy. I'm sure everybody else wanted to get off that plane as well yesterday.
No question. Absolutely. No more American for me. All right, Edzo, yesterday, big win for the Hawks. Yeah. They win a tough one in Winnipeg. Then they go into St. Louis, and they throttle the Blues. What's your take from this weekend?
Well, they should have beaten a team that had lost 5 in a row up until that point in Winnipeg. It was a real defensive battle. There wasn't a lot going on Friday night in Winnipeg. Patrick Kane involved in both goals after being shut out in back-to-back games, so it was a big win. But that's a game you got to win when a team is struggling like the Jets had been. Losers of 5 in a row. Yesterday, the schedule came up very favorable for the Blackhawks. It's going to happen over the course of a season where you're going to catch a team that is in a real, is in a real tough stretch of their schedule. St. Louis had played Thursday night on the road, Friday night on the road, and then turn around and play Sunday morning at 11:30. I mean, they played 3 games in 3.5 days. So the schedule was there, and good teams take advantage of it, and certainly the Blackhawks are just that. And it was a heck of a game for 2 periods, and all of a sudden the 3rd period just shut right down. I know, David, you were tuned in. Capri, you were busy. But, I mean, it was a tale of 2 games, really, when you looked at it, because the first 2 periods were physical. It was fast. Chances at either end. Both teams were, taking some chances, some slow changes going on. And then the 3rd period, the Hawks took over. St. Louis had nothing left. And for me, that's where the Blackhawks really took over, and that's where the rest of the team, I really feel, cashed in, and the Blackhawks were that. Now, the Blackhawks have been on the road for 2 weeks. Now they got to turn around, and this is a tough, tough game. Your first game back after being on the road for 2 weeks, and yes, they had a chance to come home for a couple of days in between Minnesota and Winnipeg. But for me, this first game after a 5-6-game road trip is always the toughest, and you got to play the first day back. The schedule makers did not do the Blackhawks any favors with this game tonight.
You know, Eddie, the game was tight yesterday, as you pointed out, 3rd period. Marian Hossa scores the game winner and gets an empty netter, too. But he had been in sort of a scoring slump, and I think that obviously you don't want to overreact to anything when it comes to Hossa or the Blackhawks, for that matter. But when you watch him, any time you see a player at that stage of his career go through a slump like that, you start to wonder, is that it? Is he done? At what point do you start to, do you lose it immediately? Where is he in terms of what kind of year he's having in your mind, and how badly did he need yesterday?
Well, I would say offensively, David, it's been an average year for Marian Hossa. I mean, he's had some bad luck as far as the goal scoring part of it. But as far as his all around game, he is still a difference maker. I mean, he made some plays yesterday in that game that very few players had the ability to be able to make, whether it's tracking down loose pucks, forechecking, coming back on the back check. It's easy to pick on a guy when, you know, he's one-dimensional and he's not scoring, or, you know, a defenseman that is a defensive stopper and he can't stop anything. I mean, Marian Hossa is a complete player. As I said, his offensive part of the game this year has been down. I mean, it's been average at best overall, but he still has an impact on the game, David. And to me, I don't think you can put a price tag on it. I still think that there are very few players that can make a difference in a game and have an impact on the game, even if they're not scoring. And that's Marian Hossa, because he does so many things for Joel Quenneville. He does so many things for Taves and Saad playing on that line. And, you know, I'm sure for Haas, it was big to get, you know, get those two goals in a matter of, what, 7, 8, 9 minutes, whatever it was yesterday. But his impact is a lot greater on this team right now, away from the offensive side of the puck. And that matters, especially when it comes to playoff time, because as you guys know, defense wins, and when you have guys that are able to forecheck and put guys into positions with the puck and take away all their options, Marian Hossa is one of very few players that can still do it. So, I mean, am I concerned, David, long-winded on Marian Hossa offensively? Not yet, because I've seen the chances there, and I still see him creating and making plays for himself and his line mates. But his all-around game, to me, is still as elite as I've seen over the course of the last couple of years, and that's important.
We're talking to the great Eddie Olczyk here on Cap and Haw. Hawks and Arizona Coyotes tonight. Should be a lot of fun over at the United Center to finally get them back home. I'm looking forward to that one. Edzo, when you've talked in the past on our show about getting a jolt, however you get it, throughout a long season, can a jolt come from Trevor Van Riemsdyk coming back, Christopher Stieg coming back, or no, because they're in the room already, the jolt has to come from the outside?
Well, I'm not going to retract what I said earlier in the year. Like, I felt that the team needed a jolt over the course of the summer or into the start of the season. It's pretty much the same team from last year, you know, with the exception, obviously, the biggest impact guy is Brad Richards. But, you know, on the back end, you know, whether it's Ron Blatt or Erickson or, you know, Christopher Stieg evolving again, you know, Van Riemsdyk got off to a great start, but, you know, how can you, you know, I mean, realistically, you know, where is he going to be psychologically and physically and mentally after coming back from this injury? So it's tough to make a move. We know the Hawks are up against the cap as it is right now. But, yeah, I mean, I think it can come from within. Christopher Stieg was having an unbelievable season until he, you know, he blocked that shot with his hand. But time will tell. The Blackhawks are still in third place in the division. Lots of room to grow moving forward. Nashville's not going anywhere, as we talked about almost 3 or 4 months ago. You guys asked me right out, what about the Nashville Predators? And I think we all agreed they're not going anywhere because they're a different team. They have Pekka, one of the top goaltenders in the league, and they got some belief down there. So you're going to have some work to do to get back to the top of the division. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's got to come from the management team. And if they feel that, you know, this is what they want moving forward, then you're not going to see any jolts. You're not going to see any tweaks moving forward. And it's hard to do that when you don't have cap space. And we've talked a lot about this over the years. As a general manager or the head of hockey operations, you could have all the talent and assets you want. But the greatest asset that you can have as a management team is cap space, because when you have cap space, you could dance with anybody in the NHL when it comes to making moves. And we know that the Hawks are up against it right now. They're good enough to win without question. You got to stay healthy. You got to get some luck, and it all, you know, it all depends on who you match up come playoff time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because the trade deadline is less than a month away. I think it's the first Monday of March. And I think the Hawks play Carolina actually that day on the 2nd of March.
Eddie, the education of Teuvo Teravainen continues. And yesterday had a bad turnover. Then he comes down and makes a really nice defensive play to cover up for that turnover. I think that Joel has trusted him on occasion and then lost confidence in him on occasion. When Christopher Stieg comes back, how does Teuvo fit into the scheme, and how would you evaluate the progress he has made to this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he fits in once Verstee comes back, David. Where are you going to, you know, where is he going to play? I guess could you play him in a fourth line role when you don't need Danny Carcillo in a lineup? Like, I thought Carcillo had an outstanding game yesterday. That fourth line, you could tell that Coach Q really had a lot of confidence in that unit. Played those guys a lot. They got the first goal of the game. Marcus Kruger with his first goal and however long, his first point in 20 games. That was a big goal, and Joel played those guys quite a bit. As far as Teravainen, I mean, you do see the flashes, David, as you mentioned, of really good plays, really smart plays, but there's still room to grow for him. But is he better suited to be in a fourth line role at the NHL level, or is he better suited to go down to the American Hockey League and play a lot and learn the pro game a little bit more? That's the question, but I think you've seen flashes of why the Blackhawks are very high on him. But, you know, the strength aspect, the experience aspect, that's going to have to come. That's going to have to you're going to have patience and take time with it. But for me, when Christopher Stieg comes back, it's a no-brainer that Teravainen drops down. It's just a matter, does he drop down to the fourth line, or does he drop all the way down where he goes to the American Hockey League and continues to grow as a young player?
Edzo, look forward to seeing you. Maybe I'll get a chance to see you tonight if your security allows the ordinary folk up there.
David and Brooke, you're always welcome. Capper, just make sure you talk to my people before you approach. Okay?
Take care, Eddie.
No question about it.
Have a great day. See you.
See you, Edzo. There he is, the one and only Eddie Olczyk. Love that guy.
Yep.
Anyway, 312-235-2525.
Hawks home for 8 straight home games.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy.
17 days, 8 games. They get a break. I know the schedule makers are not kind to them playing tonight, but after that, this is a nice break in the schedule.
Eddie Folkner, 1025. Talk Dean Smith. Tim Brown, 1055. And a lot of your calls, so let's open those up now. 312-235-2525. You bummed about James Shields. There's a lot to talk about. James Dolan, the owner of the Knicks.
I want to ask you about two things when we get back NFL-related. I want to ask you about Richie Incognito, and I want to ask you about Greg Hardy.
Done. Let's do that, too. Want Greg Hardy in Chicago? Might be available. 312-235-2525. Be right back.
Cap and Haw Show on WGN Plus and Comcast Sportsnet.
We are going to build a bully, and we're going to see if you want to play us for 60 minutes, because we're going to give everything we have, every snap out there. And again, that represents not just ourselves, but it represents our community, and we're proud to represent Buffalo.
All right, there's my guy, Rex Ryan, head coach, Buffalo Bills.
Going to represent the community by making your first signature signing, basically, Richie Incognito, a known bully.
So he should be banned.
So you're going to build a bully by signing a bully.
So he doesn't get a second chance.
I didn't say that. This isn't a second chance.
You're firing on him.
This isn't. I am firing on him. I have every right to fire on him, because you are a new head coach with a new organization, and your first move is going to be symbolic of what you stand for, based on what we just heard, correct? You're going to sign a guy who is the face of what's wrong with the NFL.
So he gets too many no people. Second chance.
I didn't say that, Cap. I did not say that. Did I say
he's
no?
He's on the Mount Rushmore.
Did I say no second chance?
Well, what you're saying
I'm
is
saying,
no second chance,
no,
or if
no,
you want
no.
one, I'm going to rip your ass.
No. First of all, this isn't a second chance, all right? This is maybe 3, 4, 5, 6.
No, second chance after the Dolphin thing.
To say that this is Richie Incognito's second chance is saying that you can't count. Richie Incognito has been a chronic troublemaker throughout his NFL career. Look, you get an opportunity based on production. I'm not saying never sign him. I'm not saying ban him from the league. I'm saying if you're a first... if you're a new head coach with a new organization, then I would probably not choose to make this my first move. I would want to make a statement about what I stand for and what we're going to be about.
That's what he's doing.
By doing something else. I know that's what he's doing. So I'm going to judge that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, well, okay, Rex, you better win. You better win.
Well, you better win anyway. You better win. Doesn't win, he's going to get fired anyway.
He's going to get fired anyway. I think you could probably respect, I don't know, I would not probably want Richie Incognito in my locker room with a bunch of young players.
I just think
a bunch of anybody.
Fake, what's the word, hubris from him. He's like, oh, we're going to beat everybody
Rex?
Up. We're not afraid of the Patriots. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're going to be the bully because you can't
be.
Do nothing. You can't outskill the Patriots, so you're just going to try and beat them up? That's not going to work.
He's got a pretty good team. I think Buffalo's...
Who's your quarterback, Mr. Buffalo?
They got to figure
Buffalo
that out.
Buffalo Bill over there.
But that team...
I'm going to start calling you Buffalo
team
Bill.
A leader.
You, if you're not the Big Capel...
Oh, who's their quarterback?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
The Big Capel turned into Buffalo Bill now that they signed Rex Ryan as a head coach. All right. I will keep an open mind as much as I can. I've sort of made it up. I don't know that I would want Richie Incognito part of my football organization.
So if John Fox announced that they'd sign Richie Incognito, you'd be upset about that.
I probably would criticize it. Yeah. I would be that guy. And I would take the heat for being that guy. I don't know that I would want him in my locker room.
Because we have to like everybody in our locker room.
No.
No, but you don't need a jerk in your locker room either.
So, again, there's no second chance. He sat out all of last year and half of the year before.
Just because he sat out, you think he's a different guy? Can we hear from him? Is he not racist anymore?
Exactly.
Is he not anti-everything anymore? That's the second chance. Yes, it is.
That is a horrible thing you just said.
What?
What's horrible?
Because his closest friends in that locker room were black.
Just because you have black friends does not mean that you're not
so
racist.
Cliche,
hold the phone.
Buying that.
All those guys in that locker group came to his rescue, said,
oh, please.
That guy a racist, farthest thing from it.
Please.
All right. I don't know that I would want to have to make the distinction between perception and reality by a guy that I could choose not to sign. I think I could probably bring somebody in to be part of my organization that I wouldn't have to explain, that I wouldn't have to justify. That I think I would have more things to worry about, like finding a quarterback, than this.
You
if I'm a new head coach,
I got no problem that Richie and Kevin.
I know you don't.
You want to sign Greg Hardy too? Let's bring him on. Adrian
Hardy.
Peterson, are you free? Would you like to come be a part of the Bears organization?
So Greg Hardy,
he gets a second chance too.
Chances, all right. Let's move on
without showing remorse. Let's
move on from Buffalo for a second. So down in Charlotte, charges dropped against Greg Hardy. There's a chance that the Panthers will part ways with him now.
Because you know why they dropped the charges.
Tell me.
Because she reached an out-of-court settlement with him and is refusing to testify against
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. Usually is related to something like that.
So, to me, that's totally different.
Than not finding enough evidence?
Then, correct.
I still think this smells bad if you're a potential employer of Greg Hardy. I still think it smells
no
bad.
No question.
I don't know that this answers any question except for the fact that you may not face legal jeopardy.
This doesn't mean he's innocent.
No, it doesn't.
He wasn't found not guilty. They simply said she won't participate.
Still could face league discipline. He still could face league discipline. That's not
to be... Now, he's been out the whole year.
Right. But he still could face the league discipline.
Correct.
After this. He could be looking for a new team. John Fox is the head coach of the Bears, who was the head coach of the Panthers in 2010 when they drafted Greg Hardy. Is Greg Hardy somebody that you would feel good about giving a second chance to if you were John Fox, if you were evaluating the Bears? Do you want Greg Hardy wearing a Bears uniform next fall?
I find it a totally different set of circumstances than Richie Incognito bullying someone in the locker room and Greg Hardy allegedly striking his pregnant girlfriend.
Well, I applaud you for being able to separate
those are not
the two
on the same level.
And for not
for
painting
me.
With a broad brush, because that sometimes is an issue here. But I will say that...
You don't have that issue.
No, I said you do.
No,
you do. Okay. They are different. I think they both are related to character. And I think sometimes you do make concessions in terms of character that you know, production versus character, that debate. That's one goes on in every front office in the NFL. Greg Hardy, I would want no part of. Absolutely none.
What if I said to you, again, I can't, but what if I said to you, you're the new GM? Hey, man, I can guarantee you, guaranteed, he's going to get 22 sacks next year.
I would say you can't guarantee that.
I'm just telling you.
You can't guarantee that.
I could see the future.
You cannot.
Hold on.
No.
What if I could?
No.
22 sacks, first team all pro.
I'll take 15 sacks doing it my way.
And I can guarantee he has no trouble.
Do you know what this guy's accused of doing?
I'm not saying I would
take
him.
Did you see the police report?
I simply am asking you a question.
I don't know that I would want that.
I don't. I wouldn't take
him. I don't want him representing my team,
exactly.
My town, my family, whatever.
I'm in agreement. I wouldn't take him
either. And I will acknowledge.
Richie Incognito, totally different.
No, I don't know that it is. I think that once you, I will take that back. I do know that.
Hey, never go to the broad brush, huh?
I do think it is different. I think what these guys are being accused of doing, based on what we know, is the levels of the degrees of seriousness are different, because I don't think anything that Richie Incognito did rose to the level of domestic abuse. But I still don't want somebody that has his history of being accused of saying things and doing things in a way that means he does not respect the people around him. He does not respect people, everybody runs into. I think you can do better. I think you can justify bringing in different people into your locker room because you have to stand for something. And what I would want to stand for if I'm an NFL general manager and my first time on the job is not that. It's not what Richie Incognito represents. I would say, thanks but no thanks. Good luck with Rex Ryan. I know that's a typical, I know that's probably.
So a guy who's gone through therapy.
Okay.
Has been out of the league for a year and a half. Was an all-pro, Pro Bowl guard when he was with the Dolphins. A year and a half. Got therapy, has admitted his problem, has worked through it. And now Rex says, I can handle this guy. He's going to be in my locker room. And you are going to sit up on your throne and have a problem with it?
I am. It's not a throne. It's not being self-righteous. It's being, what kind of locker room do you want to create? What kind of environment do you want to build? What kind of camaraderie do you want to promote? And all of those things lead me back to, this isn't being self-righteous and sitting on a throne or anything. It's trying to surround yourself with people that you want to, you can trust, and you know how we're going to react when things get bad.
He has sat out 24 straight
that
years.
Tells me he's going to be rusty too. How old is he? I don't need 34 year old guards.
Richie Incognito is 31.
If I'm going to take a chance,
hope he was in the gym.
Yeah, exactly,
because he was a little chunky when he got let go.
Linemen are big boys,
whatever.
Take a time
racist
out.
And chunky.
We'll come right back, talk to Eddie Fogler about Dean Smith. And we'll get to Ty and John and you, 312-235-2525. It's Kevin Hall.
You're listening to the Kevin Hall Show.
The man that he made me out of, along with my parents, obviously, and the basketball talents that he kind of elevated to another level just from the knowledge of the game and giving me an opportunity to play. There's no way you guys would ever got a chance to see Michael Jordan play without Dean Smith teaching me the game.
There's MJ talking about his late coach, Dean Smith, who passed away Saturday night at the age of 83. He has been in declining health since 2010. And one of his longtime assistants, also the head coach at South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Wichita State, and the guy who will tell a great story about watching Michael as a high school senior at their camp. He's my friend. He's Eddie Fogler. He joins us now. Eddie, good morning. How are you doing today?
Morning, Eddie.
Good morning, guys. Cap, you're back from Richmond. You made it, huh?
I made it. We had a little delay when we landed here, but that's a story for another day. But, yeah, we did make it. It's a good game yesterday between two pretty good teams. The weather down there was spectacular.
Well, it was nice in South Carolina as well. And, by the way, you are definitely the best-dressed man at that game yesterday.
I appreciate it. Let's talk about your former boss, Dean Smith, who passes away over the weekend. David Haas says if you had a Mount Rushmore of college basketball, he has Coach K, Bob Knight, John Wooden, Dean Smith. Where would you put Coach Smith among the all-time greats?
Well, I mean, he's certainly one of the all-time greats, Dave. I'm not sure you can rank those guys, but here's something that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about. First of all, yesterday I was actually relieved when Roy Williams called me, because Coach has basically been really been gone for about 5 years with, you know, with dementia, and it's been really sad. So yesterday, to me, for me, it was a day of relief. And then, you know, reading all the stuff online and watching the television, and this morning with all the, you know, the papers, the columnists around the country. Today's been a lot harder for me because of, it hit home more for me today. I'm gonna make a statement, and you guys know sports very, very well, and for many, many years. Tell me what you think.
All right, Eddie, before you say it, we're gonna put you on hold and reestablish that we got a bad cell with you. So hang on one second, because we want to get this statement to sound. Eddie was with him for a long, long time. You know that staff was Eddie Fogler, Bill Guthridge, who became the head coach,
Roy Williams. Yeah, that's a pretty good staff. Bill Guthridge was the one who took over when Dean Smith stepped aside in 1997. Roy Williams went on to great things at Kansas and came back to North Carolina. And Eddie Fogler, as you pointed out, he moved on and had his own career. So that's
Wichita State,
great
Vanderbilt,
staff.
South Carolina.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see all the tributes and from everyone who at the Carolina family, Jim Delaney, you know, paying tribute to
Carolina
him.
Guy. Carolina guy. That was Eddie's college roommate.
Was it really?
Yeah.
They were college roommates?
Yeah.
Charlie Scott was a fascinating tale that he told about being the first African-American player recruited by Dean Smith. And everyone from James Worthy, it's just been very compelling to read all the tributes throughout the country from guys who considered Dean Smith just like a second father.
All right, let's try and reestablish with Eddie now. Do we have you there now, Coach?
Yeah. Hey, Cap, is that better?
Yeah. Much better. Much better.
What I was going to say is, I'm going to make a statement here, and I'm obviously biased. And, you know, when you look at the man and all the great things that he accomplished and all the things he stood for, I think that in the 50 years since he took over as North Carolina's head coach, 50 or so years in the early 60s, mid-60s to today, that the North Carolina basketball family might be the greatest, most unified family of any sport, of any coach ever. I don't know, as I think about it, that there's been anybody that has established such a loyalty, such a gathering of people who truly believe, respect, and love the man. And I'm going to the managers, to the secretaries, to the custodial people who work in the Smith Center.
That's strong. Yeah, but I don't know that there's a comparison. I mean, every school has an alumni base and a strong connection from one generation to the next. But I think that's a good point, Eddie, because you hear everybody who has gone through that program speak of the same sort of reverence for Coach Smith and for everything it meant to be a Tar Heel.
Yeah, and over, you know, even you know, when he got out of coaching, he still was the grandfather, the patriarch of North Carolina basketball. So, you know, with that, it's what an incredible man. And then sometimes you don't really look at somebody as to who they are, what they are, and what their successes were until they pass away. And when you look back at the life of Dean Smith, it's truly remarkable.
Eddie, when you look at this man, and he gets so much praise for being such an amazing coach, but he was so much more than basketball, especially after he married his wife, Linnea. I mean, he got involved in stuff off the court that most people don't even have any pay any attention to.
Well, right, Dave. And so, yeah, Coach Smith was very into, you know, I think I read a quote today that his parents told him, treat every human being with respect. Everybody's important. And he truly believed that. And you know, stood up, you know, stood up for certain things, whether it was integration in Chapel Hill or, you know, other social issues that a lot of people were not, you know, strong enough to stand up for. But if he truly believed something, he would stand up and stand up strong. The people, the loyalty. When North Carolina teams played, Cap, they wanted to win for him. And if they lost, they felt bad for him. It was unbelievable to have a coach who didn't curse, didn't raise his voice a lot, never cursed, ever. To get a group of talented players to play together and to try to win for him because out of the respect and love and trust they had for the coach. Unbelievable.
Eddie, when here in Chicago, when we hear Dean Smith come up, and obviously during the Michael Jordan era, it was always, well, there's only one coach that could ever shut down Michael Jordan. That was Dean Smith. How did he take that? Did he have a sense of humor about it? And did he, or did it ever bother him that that was always sort of the thing that, you know, because of the offense, because of his scheme, that was, you know, he was known as that guy?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who said that, but that's so ridiculous. And Michael obviously has alluded to that. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, Dean Smith helped mentor and develop maybe the greatest player ever to play the game. So the statement in itself is absolutely ridiculous and obviously no merit to it. So I would never even bring it up. It was so ridiculous, and I never heard him even. I'm not even sure he would think about it.
Eddie, you told a great story I related on NBCSN yesterday, going to see Michael the first time. Can you tell that story again?
Yeah, I can, Captain. It was many years ago I told it to you. I did go to I'll tell you the story. When Michael came to camp, I wanted to go see him, so I'm in charge of five gyms. Our camp was spread out all over Chapel Hill and Durham. It was such a large camp, and so I needed to go by five gyms in the morning to make sure that the balls were there and the doors were open, you know, that type of thing. It was Monday morning, first day of camp, and they always were. There was never a problem, but, you know, I was supposed to double check, you know, all the gyms. So the first gym I went to was the gym where Michael was a camper at the University of North Carolina, and they were kind of playing pickup before camp, just kind of a couple guys while some others were shooting at the other basket, whatever. And I saw this young, skinny 6'4" kid with his tongue out, wagging, just dunking on people. You know, it's just ridiculous. And so I got so infatuated with Michael, I never made it to the other four gyms that I was supposed to go by, because I just sat and watched Michael for about an hour and a half. And then I got to lunch. I don't know if I told you this, but I got to lunch and I saw his high school coach, Clifton Herring. I said, "Clifton, I need to talk to you." He said, "What do you need, Eddie?" I said, "I saw Michael play." He goes, "Did you like him?" I said, "Clifton, I loved him. What other camps he going to?" He went, "He's going to five-star." I said, "No, you don't want to send him to five-star. It's not a very good camp." "He's going somewhere else." "No, you don't want to send him to that camp, Clifton. This should be the only camp you should go to." And then he goes to five-star literally 3 weeks later, and he went from basically unknown to he and Patrick Ewing were the two best players in the country in a week.
Crazy.
And that was Michael Jordan. But I never made the other camp, Cap. I assume the balls got, the doors were open.
Exactly.
What do you think you'll be best remembered for, Eddie, in terms of the innovation that you hear a lot of in the last 24 hours? The four corners, you forget about that, but boy, that was all North Carolina. Nobody does it anymore because of the shot clock, but that was what one of those things that once they went in the four corners, it was over.
Well, I don't think that would be it. I really don't. I think, you know, his the X and O in the use of timeouts, you know, certainly are being used today. I mean, coaches today are still using, whether it be the high-low motion offense, the use of timeouts to make the game longer. I think that it's the subtleties of huddling at the foul line, thanking a player for the pass, pointing to the player who gave you the good pass. North Carolina basketball teams back in the late 60s on a substitution, when a player came out of the game and was being substituted for, the entire bench, coaches, players, managers would stand up and applaud the player coming off the court for his effort. Whether he threw away or missed a layup, we always stood at substitutions. I think more in that area in terms of how the game should be played, a team game, the respect for the game, I think to me probably are more, I remember more than all the great, you know, plays and innovative stuff on the court that Coach Smith, you know, started.
Eddie, appreciate the time. Our condolences again on the loss of your mentor and your friend. He was a hell of a basketball coach, and I remember him coming to my camp that I was running at Illinois State back in the early 90s and could not have been a nicer person.
Well, I appreciate it, Cap. Thanks for having me on. Truly a remarkable man, and you know, college basketball, well, everybody will all miss him. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Eddie.
You bet. Talk to you soon. Right. Take care. There he is, Eddie Fogler, from former head coach South Carolina of Wichita State, Vanderbilt, and I think 10 years as the assistant to the late Dean Smith.
Yeah, and you had Hank Iba on your final four. Or
I said he's a candidate for that four spot.
Yeah, 750 victories, two national championships. Kenny Smith's got more victories than just as many national titles.
Yeah, I mean, he could go there. There's a number. Naismith, maybe you do a, you know, Naismith in a different category. He invented the game. Anyway, 312-235-2525. It'd be hard to put Ray Meyer. He never won a national title.
That was it.
When they had the pure national title, he won way back in the day when the NIT was bigger than the NCAA. But Dean Smith certainly in that discussion. Take time out. We'll get to your calls. Be right back.
You're listening to the Cap'n Haw Show.
Cap'n Haw rolls on Comcast Sportsnet. Thank you to Eddie Fogler for joining us from South Carolina. He used to be the assistant at UNC to the late Dean Smith. Phone lines are hopping, 312-235-2525. Greg Hardy has his charges dropped. Would you want to see him a Bear? Richie Incognito is going to the Bills. Are you, like David Haw, don't think he should have gotten an opportunity, or Brooks says that, or like me, sat out a year and a half, I got no problem getting a second chance.
It's not a second chance. That's where I would correct you. This is not a second chance.
Yes, it
this is.
This
is probably his 22nd chance. He was not, everybody wants
never
to define.
Never was in trouble before.
Everybody, well, I think that that depends on your definition of trouble.
Well, since.
He was a bad guy to have in your locker room before the Dolphins bullying incident.
Okay, but since the incident, he's been out a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone through therapy, counseling, the whole deal. And he wants a second chance. He's had a number of teammates.
He wants another opportunity.
Yeah, it's a chance.
I'm going to play semantics with you. It's not a second chance.
It's a second chance.
It's his 12th chance. I don't know how many on this track.
Let's go to Ty in Chicago.
Hey, Ty.
Hey, good morning, Brooke, Captain Hall. How's it going, guys?
Good. What's up there, buddy?
Hey, as far as Richie Incognito, I think he's a reflection of what the NFL, their inability to handle bad cases of players in the NFL. I read online back in 2012, and this is the Huffington Post, he was accused, actually he was accused of molesting a volunteer at a charity golf tournament held by the Dolphins.
True.
He paid $30,000 in a settlement to the victim. The police basically didn't do anything, which in the Ray Rice case, they basically did the same thing, nothing, you know, which is that sense of entitlement to pro sports players. And I think that Incognito doesn't deserve another chance. And you guys are closer to the facts than I am. So I challenge, you know, if Haw or Cap, if you guys, you know, want to know more about this, to investigate.
I think you're just asking for trouble, Ty, and that's a good phone call. Thank you for making it. I think you're asking for trouble. This is a guy, you know, I respect the impact therapy can have on individuals. I just don't know if this is a guy that his track record, he has a pattern of bad behavior. He was kicked out of Nebraska. He was kicked out of Oregon. He was booted off the Rams. He has had issues with the Dolphins that are well documented. Rex Ryan wants to make this his first move. I think this raises questions about Rex Ryan. This is my opinion.
Okay, let me read you something real quick. This is an article in the Buffalo newspaper. You only have to look around Tim and Tracy Rodemeyer's living room to know there's some serious Bills fans living here. It's a love they passed on to their son, Jamie. When Jamie was alive, at least once, twice a year, we'd get out to a game, said Tracy Rodemeyer. Their son, Jamie, was 14 when he killed himself, following years of harassment and bullying from classmates. His story gained national attention, and his parents spent the time since speaking out against bullying of any child. Through the years, we've heard so many bullying incidents, and of course, when it comes to sports, they're starting to get emphasized more, she said, including their hometown team. When the Bills announced Saturday, they had reached an agreement in principle with Richie Incognito. Tracy and her husband said, "We're taking this as a second chance for Richie Incognito. We support it. If someone becomes a bully, there's usually something that's happening in their lives that makes them act out. It's a fine line between bullying and hazing the new guy. Hopefully he's also learned that if someone tells you to stop, you stop." As for new coach Rex Ryan's comments about building a bully out of their team they love, they say they hope that's more in reference to making the Bills a tough team to beat.
So how can you be rehabbed and then still be expected to play the role as bully? That's what I'm saying.
What do you mean play the role as bully?
Well, Rex Ryan is trying to build a team of bullies.
It's a statement. They're trying to build a tough team.
Okay.
The NFL. This isn't Father Flanagan's boys' home.
Right.
Okay.
That story is well written, and obviously you put a face on it. The writer did his or her job in doing that. I've written that column. I've written that story. It's the way that you approach a story like that. You try to find, you try to humanize it. And certainly you hope that all goes well for them, and they embrace their Bills, and the Bills win big, and everything goes well. But if you're asking me if I would have signed Richie Incognito, no, I would not have.
New York Star-Ledger conducted a poll on their website asking Giants fans they need offensive line help, how they would feel if they signed Richie Incognito. 70% supported him getting what they called a second chance. 312-235-2525. Tim Brown's going to join us. We'll ask him that question. We'll get to John in Algonquin. He wants to talk about Ndamukong Suh, Jeff and East Moline. Be right back.